John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Don't know what's going on because I can't hear anything in my headset. So welcome everybody to an unusual version of the John Clayton Show. Here to get you ready for another busy day. Seahawks. I'm not sure. I didn't go over there today because I wasn't sure if they're going to be on the practice field because of the smoke and haze in the air. So right now we're trying to figure that out and also try to figure out what's going on with the equipment and all that stuff. But I guess we get started with the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
He didn't feel good yesterday at all either. I was expecting that he'd make the start, but, when he called in today and just said, I don't think I can go, and, hopefully he's going to be, at a high fever. I don't know exactly what it is, but our doctors looked at him, and hopefully he'll be okay in a couple days. With Ross getting up here late, I sat down with Nick Vincent. Their lineup is, got the right-handed hitters at the top. Nick's a pretty good matchup for that, so it might be one less time for Ross to face him. So it worked out fine. Guys executed the plan really well.
And, of course, that's Scott Servais talking about the strange start to last night's game because of all the problems. And, of course, we are bringing you the top five stories of the day, the top five brought to you by Eastside Funding. But we're talking about the show right now, trying to get this show going. But we got Mike Leake, who was ruled out right before the game, an hour before the game because of an illness. And so they ended up taking a reliever, Nick Vincent, starting him, brought up Detweiler from Tacoma, and that was at 3:30, getting him through traffic and getting him out to the bullpen, and he actually pitched pretty well. And the Astros had the same problem. They had a starting reliever in Brad Peacock, and he was able to make it an inning and two-thirds before they scrambled and got into their bullpen, and they had to go down to AAA in Fresno and pull up Framber Valdez just to have another pitcher out there. But it was a loss at 3-2. Again, the hitting still not there. Ben Gamble did get a single in the eighth inning with runners at first and third, but still they had injury problems. I mean, Nelson Cruz is kind of banged up right now. He's got a bad back. D. Gordon struck out, and so the M's now drop 4.5 games behind the Oakland A's and the Houston Astros, and so the Astros get that victory last night. So 3-2. So it's this afternoon, a 1 o'clock game right now, where it's kind of vital to kind of get back, because now if you lose this one, you're 5.5 back, and you're really treading water. Marco Gonzalez is going to be on the mound, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But still, it was a tight game. Everything else goes. But defensively, the Mariners did pretty well as far as their defense, because they were able to get 6 double plays. But overall, they're 21-39 when they're scoring 3 runs or fewer. And the problem is, there's too many games where they're scoring 3 runs or fewer. And, of course, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
Is there anything on the timeline for Doug, if you expect to still have him?
He's doing really well. He's really excited about coming back. He's running. He'll want to play next week. We'll just get him back out here, and we'll make that determination next week. But he's going to be there for the opener.
So Pete Carroll talking about some of the injury stuff right now, and it's good news on Rashad Penny. He's able to be on track for week one. In fact, he's actually returning to practice. And Doug Baldwin, who I can vouch for, looks like he's going to be ready to play in week one. I know he was doing some good running on the field yesterday, and so that's looking good. But then a surprise injury cropped up. J.D. McKissic, he finds out he gets a Jones fracture, and that's one that's right between it's a break right between the base and the middle part of the fifth metatarsal bone. And so he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And so that does create, I think a guarantee now that C.J. Procise is going to make the team. I don't know what they'll do with McKissic, and that will have to be a decision. They're also trying to get Deion Jordan back for next week, but still might be a little bit difficult. Still no guarantee on what's going to happen with Ed Dixon on that groin injury. And Amara Darbo is having tests done on his clavicle, and he's also sitting out with a hip injury. DJ Fluker basically wants to play, but with that finger injury, they're not sure about that. As far as different things right now, that's where the Mariners are as far as injuries, but they're still trying to get a little healthier, but that McKissic injury is a setback.
Number three.
The comp is on. You know, George has had a kind of a startling career, really, to come so far so fast. And there's nothing that we put in front of him that he couldn't handle. Even when you take a look at the rehab process that he went through, he had just totally competed and attacked it and came back in great shape. So we're going to – this has been the thought all along, to get him back moving again, feeling comfortable at his left side, and with the thought of him getting over there and competing on the right side.
And so Pete Carroll talking about the move yesterday where George Fant – and I know we talked to him on Monday, and he wasn't sure about – whether that's going to happen, but it did happen. They moved him from the left side over to the right side. Isaiah Battle is trying to get back on the field too, and that'll be a competition. It all comes down to Jermaine Ifedi. Ifedi continues to struggle. Pete did say some good things about him, but still, the game has to get better for him to retain that right tackle job. And so you can see that what they're doing is trying to create as much competition for him as possible and see if it's going to fail with Ifedi, which guy to go to, whether it's going to be Isaiah Battle. It's not going to be Jamarco Jones because he had the ankle injury and had the surgery on the ankle for a high ankle sprain. So he's probably going to go on the injured reserve list. Then Fant's now a candidate, so they can do it. And I kind of wonder, because I was almost doubtful that they would make the Fant move because, again, he's only been on the left side and he's had such limited experience. But what you can also see is that, they could also take DJ Fluker and put him out there, but probably not with that finger injury right now, with also the uncertainty whether he's going to practice and whether he's going to play. But that's the injury situation for the Seahawks. But also, that's where they stand right now at right tackle. Its comp is on. That means competition is going for Jermaine Ifedi.
Number four.
I think, the biggest thing they have to do is that rotation's got to be solid. And I've said that numerous times of every team. And that's why I said last week to you guys that the Houston Astros will, I think, be at the top of the AL West, is because that rotation will not sustain the lack of output that they've had. Dallas Keuchel back in Oakland and also even Gerrit Cole. So the Mariners, I think the biggest thing they need to make sure that they can get synced up, especially once September 1st rolls around, is that rotation, when you got some of these call-ups and you can start to give guys a little bit more of a breather and have a couple more matchups in the middle of there to limit some of these 100-pitch outings.
And that's it right now, because the rotation is really kind of in a mess right now. Mike Leake, of course, missing the game last night with an illness, still waiting on James Paxton to try to come back. Felix Hernandez is now kind of filling in, but now it's kind of getting short on numbers, and that's got to be a little bit scary. Important for Marco Gonzalez, to come back on the mound and got a few extra days of rest, but they need him to do some well. James Paxton extended his long toss now to 170 feet on Tuesday, and he says the swelling in the forearm is pretty much gone right now. That's encouraging. So he's on track to get into the starting rotation sometime between August 30th and September 2nd. So that's the plan right now. And, of course, that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number five.
The rich are getting richer in Minnesota. Already one of the best defenses in football. Expected to add safety George Iloka, according to NFL media. This one's not a surprise because Iloka played for Vikings coach Mike Zimmer when Zimmer was the defensive coordinator in Cincinnati. It's a surprise, though, because the Vikings seemingly don't have a need in the secondary for George Iloka.
But George Iloka, instead of going to the Oakland Raiders, went to the Minnesota Vikings, and that deal is done. So he's signed right now. Remember, he was released by the Cincinnati Bengals, and so that was one move. Zipping over to other things in the National Football League, big surprise, A.J. McCarron. First, it was supposed to be a fractured collarbone. Now it's going to be a bad shoulder injury. Well, he was actually limited on the practice field today. So it looks like there's a chance he can ease his way back in. Competition Committee is having a conference call today to try to talk about the helmet rule, which have 51 penalties in the first 33 games. No major change is coming. They're going to put together a big 30-minute package of tape on that and get it all to the coaches and all that. But again, no major changes, and right now this thing is not going over very well. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go under further review and look at some things going on at practice yesterday at the Seahawks. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor. John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
And the report card is where we kind of look at in-depth what's going on with different things in sports. And, of course, naturally, the Seahawks remain a good topic. They were off on Sunday. They were off on Monday. So they were back yesterday on the practice field. Unfortunately, Maura and I weren't able to see them because they were indoors because of the haze that's in the air from all the fires and all that stuff, and expect that was something that they can do. But, it's a time also to, get a chance. I mean, everybody else, Brock and Mike Salk and everybody were over there looking at practice and all that, and came up with some interesting thoughts, and we'll get into those as we go under further review. But I think the one we'll get started with is Brock's opinion right now on who the best player is on this team.
Brian Schottenheimer's been around some of the best QBs now. Okay, he's been around a long time. He's around Montana. He was around Andrew Luck. He's around Drew Brees. He's around very talented players. And he said there's not been any of them that throw the deep ball like Russ. And, he's a wizard, and he runs around, he does all these amazing things, but when push comes to shove, and this is where he's very different than most 5'10" quarterbacks.
And that's, I think, the unique part about Russell Wilson. I think you can see he's getting better and better. And I thought it was an interesting test against the Los Angeles Chargers on Saturday night, because I know that running the ball is one of the things that Brian Schottenheimer really wants to do. I mean, that's what he was brought here to do. And, it started out pretty well with Chris Carson, having his 9 carries, had the 23-yard touchdown run that was called back because of a penalty to Will Disley. But I think you can see they can run the ball much, much better than they have in the last 2 years. But what was interesting, I saw some critics basically say, hey, for the team that's supposed to run the ball that much, how come they're out there throwing 21 passes, almost a 2-to-1 ratio and only about 11 runs in the first half? Well, I think what they were doing, and that's what you do in the preseason. You test some certain things out and you look at matchups and you see what you can do. And going against the Chargers was a great matchup in the sense that, they were out there, facing one of the better defenses that people don't even talk about. I mean, that defensive line, even though it didn't have Joey Bosa, is really good for the Chargers. They're solid in the secondary, and it's a good defense, and so that was a good test. And so Russell Wilson was just unleashing some long, complete passes that were good. An amazing pass that went over to David Moore. Got a good one over to Jerron Brown. And so they were really firing the ball deep and testing out the deep pass, and I think, just like Brian Schottenheimer told Brock Hewitt, I mean, probably one of the better deep balls passers in the league. And where that's going to be so important, the better they get the running game, the more likely they can get good long passes downfield. And that, I think, is going to be really fun and important for this offense to do. Because the way I look at this team this year, the Russell Wilson buys them time to try to get the defense better. Because, again, the defense certainly, it finished okay last year, giving up 23 points a game. That's still a little bit higher. And I say finished in the last 7 games, where they didn't have Cam Chancellor, didn't have Richard Sherman, they didn't have Cliff Averill. I mean, they're down 3 Pro Bowlers. Now this team is down 5, and with Earl Thomas gone, 6 Pro Bowlers. But they still have some good young talent. But good young talent still takes time to form and get together, and they're going to make mistakes. They're going to have those different things. But I think that you can see that some things are getting positive. I mean, Barkevious Mingo really moves well and gives more range than they had at the strong side linebacker position, and he has the ability to get in there and rush the passer. I think you can see that the cornerback position, if they need to go to Trey Flowers at some point, they can do that. Certainly Shaquem Griffin has done a sensational job and is, mounting a case that he can maybe get some playing time, maybe in nickel defense. And the defensive line, I mean, they need to stop the run better, but they're doing it. But in the meantime, if Russell Wilson can get this offense to 24, 25 points and they get a good running game and leads going into the second half, then I think that they can get to that 9-10 win level. Again, 8-9 is where I'm kind of putting them, but they can get a little bit more out of it. But that's what Russell Wilson is able to do. And you go back to the whole formula. I know that Omar Kelly down in the Miami area tweeted it out today. The formula for winning is, one, to have an elite quarterback. The Seahawks have an elite quarterback. The other ways to win is to have a stifling type of defense and a good running game. And right now, just not a stifling defense for Seattle, but I think that'll be a good defense, a decent defense, and then a good running game. But one of the things in the running game right now that's been shaken up is the injury to J.D. McKissic. J.D. McKissic, who's like the most versatile back because he can be a running back, he can be a wide receiver, he can do the jet sweep, and he offers so much speed, has that Jones fracture, so he's out 4 to 6 weeks. And so what that does, it pretty well locks up C.J. Procise to make the team. And I know that's what's discussion on Brock and Salk earlier today.
Speaking of C.J. Procise, who caught one of those two bombs from Russell, he's on this team regardless of what happens to McKissick. Even if he doesn't have the Jones fracture yesterday, I just think Procise is on this team. When you see the upside that he has, when you see him come out of the backfield, beat Justin Coleman down the field on essentially a go route, I know it's kind of, I think it was a wheel. I missed the beginning of it. But basically, he and Justin Coleman were running down the field step for step, and then C.J. Procise just ran by him and caught a touchdown pass. He's that impressive as a receiver out of the backfield. And because of the versatility that he adds, not to mention he's a big dude. It's not like he's a little guy who can do that. He's got some size to him. It's like 220 pounds. You put all that together, and I know he's got the injury history, and I know he's frustrating, but C.J. Procise is going to be on this team.
Yeah, I think there's no question right now. And I'll even be bolder about this because certainly, you know, the inavailability of C.J. Procise, I thought a week ago, pushed him to the back of the list at running back. And I think that's still pretty accurate. But still, I think you can see the value that he has. And because what he does, he gives this team the opportunity to gradually get Rashad Penny in there, to try to get J.D. McKissick back. I mean, Mike Davis, I think, is a very solid, good backup running back. But what I could see in the opener against the Denver Broncos is that if they don't want to rush Penny. Now, Penny's going to be out there. I mean, he'll be active. He'll get the chance to play because, again, one thing that he does have is that value as he'll be returning kickoffs, and so he'll be on the active roster. But in the case of C.J. Procise, I mean, he could be the third down back. He can be the backup running back and, again, have a chance to really reclaim the stuff that I think that he's lost as far as in the eyes of the coaches by all the injuries and all the missed time. But as a talent, he's there. And, you know, last year, I mean, a similar type of thing what happened is that Alex Collins fell to the back of the list. He became the fifth back on a team that was going to keep four, and he ends up getting cut, going over to Baltimore and having 970 yards plus rushing. And so that was talent. You know, C.J. Procise is a different type of talent, but he gives you power running ability. He also gives you pass catching ability. Yes, the injuries are frustrating. You can't eliminate that. That's something that's not going to, you know, be away from. And of course, every time you look and you say, is he going to be dressing or not? I mean, that's going to be the big question. But when he's on the field, I know he didn't get good yardage numbers, but I thought that he ran hard and did some good things. C.J. Procise, I agree, Mike Salk, he is going to make the team. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, get a chance to catch up with Nathan Bishop of Baseball Prospectus. Talk about that weird game last night against the Astros, and where both teams started out with relief pitchers, and what trends are happening right now. The breakup of the Washington Nationals, that's coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Nathan Bishop of Baseball Prospectus. And Nathan, I mean, here it is. It's a rush to see who's going to make the playoffs and all that stuff. And last night's game against the Houston Astros was just weird. I mean, what, right before the game, Mike Leake ended up getting an illness, and an hour before the game, he had to be scratched, and the next thing you know, they're reaching down to Tacoma to bring up Ross Detweiler because they only have a seven-man bullpen right now. The Astros had the same problem. They had to put a reliever out there to start, just like Nick Vincent had to start for the team. I mean, last night was just weird baseball.
It really was, John, and you combine it with just the really strange weather that we're having, too. It's just a very surreal experience watching the game last night. And then, lo and behold, this morning, Ross Detweiler, for his service to the team, which was really gutting out six innings, which they had to be thrilled to get, is the hard life at the fringes of professional sports. He gets designated for assignment today because the team just needs another arm, you know?
So, and by the way, that arm is Nick Rumbelow. He comes up from Tacoma.
Correct, yeah. So you're right, John. But, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting. The Astros are the defending World Series champions. They're a really, really talented team. But, you know, as you said, they had to start Brad Peacock. They had a bullpen day just like the Mariners. And it just goes to show that, you know, you come into a season with all of these plans, even the very best rosters, the best organizations, the best plans. By the time you get to the dog days of August, everybody is tired. They're dealing with injuries and fatigue or just, you know, illness, like what happened to Mike Leake yesterday, and weird stuff happens. Like you said, there's just so much baseball that's already happened that these guys are starting to get run down a little bit.
Yeah, no question. And, of course, I don't know. It's like, is this a bad part of the game in the way they're doing it? Because, again, you know, they keep on trying to adjust for the fatigue factor, at least on the pitchers, by now getting, you know, eight-man bullpens and, you know, having it set up. So you, sometimes you may only have to ask your starter to go five innings and, you know, you restrict everybody to 100 pitches. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, the bullpen guys get worn out. And, of course, they do nothing right now for the position players. They get worn out. Again, you know, 162 games is a lot, and I don't think they're going to shorten it. Again, 154 might actually be better, but that's not happening. But no, I think there's something in the game right now that has kind of got me scratching my head.
I think we're trying to figure out what the next step is, John, and I think we're kind of in one of those transitional periods. I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago with Moneyball, the statistical revolution of the game, that has already happened. That is over. And everybody's always looking for that next edge, and everybody's looking for that next competitive advantage. And I think that what we've been seeing the last 3 to 5 years, John, is health, the frontier of medicine, what that can do for performance. I know there are some teams that are really, really deep into that. I know the Dodgers are extremely in-depth with that. I know the Mariners are looking into it. And it's leading to these, I think it's, I don't know if aesthetically, John, it's great for the game. I don't know if I love watching openers, you know, having a relief pitcher throw the first inning of a game followed by a starting pitcher. I don't think I love having so many pitcher changes or such deep bullpens. But I also kind of don't think that this is necessarily going to last forever. I don't know that for sure. But, you know, this is a transitionary time, and teams are trying to figure out what the next step is. And I think we may just have to kind of buckle up and while they kind of experiment for the next couple of years.
Well, I guess it really does answer. And I know this goes back to a Jerry DePoto statement toward the end of last year. You know, whatever's happening as far as the young guys coming into baseball, most are coming in more as position players as opposed to pitchers. And that makes it harder to find pitchers, particularly starting pitchers, and that's becoming, and of course, if you're trying to make a trade, it makes it much more costly to try to make some kind of a deal or sign a pitcher. I mean, that I think that, you know, this, like, you're starving for starting pitching.
It is, and I think that, you know, we're seeing, again, talking about this transitionary period, John, we're seeing this rise in velocity that's been going on. The average pitch in Major League Baseball has gotten faster every year for the last 10 years. Pitchers are throwing harder than they ever have, and part of the reason for that, that's not an accident, John. These guys from a very young age get into programs in high school through college that don't necessarily talk about the old adage of pacing yourself the first couple times through the lineup. This idea of going 7, 8, 9 innings being the job of the starting pitcher is starting to become a little bit antiquated. And so you see these guys come out there with just guns blazing. It used to be relief pitchers that would come out there at max effort. Now it seems like every pitcher is throwing max effort every single pitch. And because of that, the velocity is spiking, but also it's leading to higher injury rates, maybe. We're not really sure what the effect of the velocity increase is going to have on arms. And also, at least the guy's just getting tired faster. Like you said, a guy can't throw max effort 110 times. The Randy Johnsons, these genetic freaks that could throw 145 pitches in a game and still top out at 97, they don't happen very often. Just, it does not occur very often within the physiology of the human anatomy. So we're just kind of trying to figure out what we're doing here. But yeah, it's a totally different thing. And, you know, the easiest way to make money, which is what most of these guys want out of their career, is to be a position player, be a backup catcher. You know, that's the punter of baseball. It's the easiest way to get on the field. So it's really going to be interesting to see where this goes, John.
Yeah, it really is. And so now, where do you kind of evaluate the Mariners are as a pitching staff? Because now, I guess it's an illness, so it's not going to keep Mike Leake out for extended period of time. You know, James Paxton's coming back from the forearm injury. You know, Felix is just, you know, trying to figure out where he is in the bullpen or on the pitching mound and all that stuff. And Marco Gonzalez is kind of hitting the fatigue factor with a big start this afternoon. So where do you think this staff is, both as starters and as relievers?
I think that we're seeing the fatigue that a lot of us worried about, John, when we were clamoring in the offseason for this team to pick up some more pitching depth overall, particularly in the rotation. You have a guy like James Paxton, who we all love. We love James, one of the best starters in the American League when he's healthy, and he's just never shown that ability to be that 30-plus start, 200-inning-a-season kind of guy. That's through no fault of his own. It's just something that is the way that he is as a pitcher. Marco Gonzalez is, you know, in his first really full season coming off of major Tommy John surgery. He's already thrown more innings this year than he did last year. There's reason to believe that he's just, you know, running into a very natural fatigue. Felix is very clearly at the end of his career. He's in the twilight of it. I think I saw today that they are going to put him back in the rotation. And then the rest of it, John, is kind of just, you know, plastered, chewing gum, whatever they have lying around to try to get out there and get through five or six innings to get to this bullpen, which, you know, at the back end of it, they have about as good a guy as anybody in the game right now at Edwin Diaz. But getting to that point has been the real challenge. And it's one of those things that you could kind of see coming. I think that the team has been really fortunate up to this point. They've really limited their injuries before James Paxton took that line drive off of his arm. But, you know, the lack of depth and the lack of elite pitching is starting to catch up to this team.
Oh, no question. That's going to be a big worry. Do you think Adam Warren has now kind of won the seventh inning job, or is that still going to be kind of a rotation based on matchups?
My guess is that they're going to play matchups, John. You know, it's really kind of thinned out with him sending down James Pezos, and, you know, Zach Duke has really not been the pitcher he was in Minnesota so far. That could very well just be some small sample size flukiness there. But I think that, you know, at this point, they're going to be matching up so many guys, and pretty soon we're on August 22nd. So when September 1st gets here, the rosters are going to expand to 40. You're going to see a huge influx of bullpen guys. Pezos and a bunch of other guys will be back. And I think that, you know, every manager, I'm sure Scott Service wishes that he could just run the 2014-15 Royals or the old Yankees with, you know, three super elite arms as soon as they have a lead after five or six innings. But that's just not the reality for them. Adam Warren's a really nice, useful pitcher. I like the trade to acquire him, but I think he's more of a matchup righty than a straight shutdown reliever in the traditional sense.
Yeah, no question. So now the Washington Nationals, it looks like they're now what, the new Kansas City Royals. They make two trades yesterday, and it looks like they're just going to unload everything, just like the Royals have done, although the Royals were still trying to pick up players toward the end of last year. They just let guys go. What's going on with the Nationals?
It's just one of the weirdest seasons that I can remember a team having in a long time, John. This is one of the most talented rosters in Major League Baseball. They have so much talent in that starting rotation with Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg. The lineup has Bryce Harper, Daniel Murphy, all this other talent, Trey Turner, Anthony Rendon, and it just, for whatever reason, the bullpen, it feels like every time they've tried to shore something up or something's fallen into place for them, another player has gotten hurt or some other hole is opened up on the roster, and it just has never come together. They made that big decision to not renew Dusty Baker's contract. Don't really know the value of managers, John. We have a really hard time measuring that statistically, but boy, it sure feels like, and this is no shot at Dave Martinez, it just feels like that they're really missing that kind of presence in the clubhouse that can hold this together. It's also entirely possible that this is just, you know, something that just happens to teams. They just get fluky bad seasons. The Mariners had an incredibly bad luck season last year in 2017, and a lot of ways they're having a really good luck season this year. So the real scary thing for them, as everybody knows, is that Bryce Harper is a free agent at the end of this year, and this was kind of their last shot with this core. And man, for a team that has made the playoffs so many times this decade, if this is the end, to never have even made a World Series with Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg, and all those guys is it's got to be a really bitter pill for them.
And what? I mean, the story came out, and I think it's probably valid, that they actually had a deal with the Dodgers, and then they pulled it back when they found the Dodgers just wanted to either just claim them on waivers and take them like that. And so they pulled that deal. So they're almost ready to give up Harper now.
Yeah, and it, you know, it makes sense if they can get literally any talent in return. I don't think that Bryce Harper really has a strong inclination to stay in Washington. I'm pretty sure that, I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of communicated that to the management. And if they could get something back for him, rather than losing him in free agency, I wouldn't be surprised if they were exploring all options, which is just an incredible thing, because for pure talent, there's a lot of great young talent in this game, John, but Bryce Harper, outside of Mike Trout, might be the most talented player in his 20s currently playing baseball. So it's a horrible decision to make. As Mariner fans, we've seen it happen before. This is the team that lost Randy Johnson, Ken Griffey Jr., and Alex Rodriguez in three consecutive years. Those are three inner circle Hall of Fame talents, but those are the pragmatics and the realities of professional sports, John. It's just, they can be really brutal sometimes.
Really can. And of course, I mean, it's happening so fast, and you just kind of shake your head and say, whoa, look at that. And and now we have another team trying to tear it down and build it back up, and that's not good for baseball.
It's not. It may not be the worst thing for the Mariners to do. I don't know if we saw today, we had another farm system ranking today from Jim Bowden, the ex-GM And it, again, been pretty consistent. The Mariners are, we're at dead last. So we talked last time I was on, the Mariners aren't in that situation that the Nationals are in right now, but they're definitely in a win now season. So you really hope, maybe in the next 9 days that Jerry Dipoto can find a team like the Nationals and get maybe a starting pitcher or another reliever or maybe just another bat on the bench to help him get to the postseason this year, because it's getting really hard to see that happening without something changing, John.
No question. And what do you have on Baseball Prospectus?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Nationals. That's what's headlining the site today. We're looking at the trades of Matt Adams and Daniel Murphy to the Cubs and Cardinals. I've also got a short piece about watching the game on Monday night at Safeco and the bizarre experience of seeing Felix Hernandez and Robinson Cano win a game in weather pretty atypical for our area. And we've got everything else covered for you. We've got fantasy baseball and all the breaking news you could want.
That sounds good. Nathan Bishop joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline, Baseball Prospectus. Read it. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, John.
You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we'll go behind the lines, get you up to date on what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, more, Dooley, I guess we can't win. Yesterday, we're over at Seahawk practice, and because of the air conditions and all that stuff, we're not talking air conditioning, we're talking about the conditions in the air. We were there for 2 hours and not able to watch any of the practice because it was indoors, and so today, figuring it was going to be the same, guess what? They're practicing outside, and we're not there.
I saw that. But I saw our own Stacey Ross. She's still complaining about the air quality a little bit over there. So maybe we'll be healthier for it.
That's true. That's a good point. So that's it. But I'll tell you what. I mean, this training camps and the way things are now in the preseason are stranger than I can remember. I know I was talking to Pat Kerwin about it yesterday, and he's almost now to the point where he wants to eliminate all preseason games because what he's worried about is all the injuries. And take a look now. I mean, again, you can never prevent injuries. That's part of the game, but there's almost too much damage that happens. Like you look, for example, with the Carolina Panthers, you know, they're going through without any of their offensive tackles. You know, Matt Khalil had a knee procedure. He's out. Then the right tackle, who they're trying to give a big contract to, he's going to be out, Darrell Williams. Then you look at the running back situation league-wide. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, here's the best running back draft in 12 years, and you've got the Redskins now down top three running backs. You know, they had to go sign Adrian Peterson just to get by. The San Francisco 49ers, they're down their top three running backs. That includes Jerick McKinnon. That's not good. Then, you got Green Bay. They got one guy that's suspended, Jamal Williams. He's hurt. The Indianapolis Colts, Marlon Mack, their starting running back, he pulled a hamstring in the Seattle game. And you're looking all around. In fact, you look at, I think, four of the top five drafted running backs are either out with some injury. I mean, Sonny Michel of the Patriots, he's got a knee procedure, and so he's down. And Rashad Penny just came back to practice, but he's not going to play in any of the preseason games. And now, the other thing I'm noticing as a trend in the National Football League is that teams are, even though you have so little time to get your team ready, now they're taking the cautious tact of not even, with the Game 3 being the one that you want to get out there the most. Well, I mean, look at Jerry Jones. He came out about 2 hours ago and said that he's shutting down in the preseason games Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, and so they're not going to play in game number 3, and that's because they've got two injuries on the offensive line. Zach Martin, who's hoping to be there with a knee injury for the opener, and they're really concerned about Travis Frederick because he's got a stinger in the neck, and they're evaluating that, and they don't know when he comes back. And so now you have more teams, you know, saying, okay, hey, it takes 3 years to make up the time that they used to have on the field all through a season before 2011 to have the number of practices. And so now the game has changed to a point now where coaches just say, well, what the heck, we'll get by. That game on Saturday, did I tell you the story about being down in L.A., Maura, and turning on the NFL Network?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so I'm down there, and I was watching the first game. They had a quadruple header, right? And so here it's, you know, I'm looking forward to see the Raiders and the Rams. And so I look over, and they black it out, in L.A. because the game was, you know, the Rams, and it was up in San Francisco. And I'm saying, oh, shoot. Then, of course, I thought, well, wait a second. If it's blacked out, it's going to be one of the local stations. So I switched to one of the local stations and watch it. Well, there's no Derek Carr. The starters pretty much for both teams weren't playing because both teams play in the opener, and they didn't want to tip off anything. You know, so you know what I ended up doing? Going back to the NFL Network and watching the blackout because there was nothing to really watch or nothing to really benefit because, I mean, you're really just seeing backup players. I mean, what? Here's Derek Carr. He's two games into the preseason, and he's only thrown four passes.
It almost seems to me like a lot of these teams value those joint practices more than they even value the preseason for getting reps and getting everybody up to speed.
Oh, no question. I think, and you almost get more accomplished sometimes as a team in these dual practices because now, I mean, you have you're not limited in different things to say 22 players out there for 11 for each team because now what you can do is you can take your 90 players, spread them over 2-3 fields, and you have your starters, you have your backups. I mean, you know, you have more reps that you can get, and you know it's competitive. And if you control it and make sure that there's no fights, I mean, unfortunately, there are some fights, and that becomes a problem. But yeah, it's a different time right now. And I still go back to the old days, back in the 70s, and that. I mean, what you'd have like 7-8 weeks of training camp, double sessions just about every day. I mean, it was grueling how that was. I mean, I know training camps used to start like in the middle of July. Now you start in 15 days. Before the first preseason game, and you know some coaches are even, particularly some of the new young coaches, are taking the tact. It's like, okay, we'll not just give them off the first day. We'll let them ease into the third day before we really start doing things on the field. But it's such a different time. You know, if I'm a coach trying to prepare an NFL team, and this is one of the reasons that John Gruden stayed out of coaching for so long, he thought it's almost impossible because again, you don't get the hitting, you don't get the quality work, and you know he's now taking the tact. It's like I'd rather go out and get, you know, a 33-year-old guy on the field just because at least he knows what he's doing. And the young guys, hey, we'll take over time to develop them.
Do you think if this trend continues and people aren't even really playing most of their starters throughout the preseason, do you think in the next CBA they will try to at least shorten the preseason? Or do you think they can...
Well, I know
they've been wanting to.
Yeah,
for
I know
a
Roger
long time.
Goodell wants to get take it down to two, but then the problem is, are you going to be able to make up the revenue, and are the players going to go for it?
I've heard the proposal of adding regular season games.
Well, yeah, that's what the owners will do in a second, but that's what the players aren't going to do because now you would have to expose your body to two more games where you can get more injuries, and that's something that they're reluctant to do. I mean, if they can come up with some kind of an equation that
that's kind of weird because you expose yourself to injuries in a preseason game, and you know, if you go out in a preseason game, I feel like it's worse than getting hurt during the regular season.
Mm-hmm. But of course, I mean, if you're going to be a starter, I mean, how much of the preseason you're going to play? I mean, now you're seeing starters playing less and less and less.
True.
You play one series if you're a starter, maybe in the first game. Some teams didn't even do that. And then the second game, you may play into the second quarter, like in the case of the Seahawks, they kept everybody in for the entire the first half. And then the third game, maybe you go three quarters. And so all you're talking about is six quarters, but yeah, you do get injuries. You do get hurt.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. That CBA is going to be coming up sooner than I think we are anticipating. It sounds far away, but it's really not.
No, it really isn't. I mean, because it's only a couple seasons away, and you know it's going to be pretty contentious. And you know, I've covered all these now for like five or six of these, and this one's going to be really nasty. But again, I don't know if you're a player, are you really going to sacrifice $1 million or so to try to get what you want and still not have the clout to be able to get what you want? Tend to think that might not be the case. And so, you got to be on guard with things like that. And, you know, for anything to happen, you have to have the players willing to strike. I think that's the simple thing. I think that's the must. So in the end, we'll see where that goes. Hey, the Mariners face the Astros today at 1:10 on 710 ESPN Seattle. And you can listen to my show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're now going to start this every Wednesday. We're going to get somebody from the Pac-12 to talk about what's happening in the conference and get into some college football. We'll talk to Evan Moore next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.